Good morning, may I be seated? The first case on our calendar is 001744, Baltimore Ravens versus Self-Insuring Employers Evaluation Board. Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I have at council table with me counsel for the amicus Charles Seitz, counsel for the other appellants in this case, Charles Seitz, who represents the players, the former Cleveland Browns players, but he will not be arguing before you today, and I would like to reserve 2 or 3 minutes for rebuttal. You have before you, Your Honors, a decision from the Franklin County Court of Appeals that gives us an outcome that is wholly inconsistent with the workers' compensation system. Never before in the history of the Workers' Compensation Act has any adjudication order or any other order of either the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, the administrator of the Bureau, or the Industrial Commission been subject to judicial review under the Administrative Procedure Act, and especially Section 119.12 of that chapter. There has never been such a review, and we submit that if the legislature wished to establish such a clear departure from what has been the rule of judicial review, which is mandamus, or jury trial under 512, that the legislature would have clearly expressed that kind of clear departure in their legislation that created the Self-Insured Employers Evaluation Board, which I will refer to in the acronym of SEEB. And we submit that the legislature did not express that intent, and that the decision of the court below not only gives self-insured employers a special benefit that other employers do not have, but gives them that benefit at the expense of injured workers. When the original Cleveland Browns were in Cleveland, their owner incurred workers' compensation obligations to their players, his players. The owners of the Browns was a self-insured employer, and when he moved the Browns out of state, those obligations went with him. But he refused to pay, and 5 former Cleveland Browns players, represented by Mr. Seitz, the players being employees of the Browns, and in that status being the same as any other employee of a self-insured employer, filed complaints with the self-insured section of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. After an investigation to determine whether those complaints were valid, the self-insured division referred those complaints to the SEEB. And on March 10, 1999, the board issued its order fining the owner of the Browns $10,000 for each of the 5 violations, which were simply blatant refusals to pay what was owed to those former Cleveland Browns players.
Let me ask you, the facts are probably not as important as the law here. What does the General Assembly mean when it says, what's the import of the General Assembly's words when it says that for administrative purposes the BWC will administer the matters for SEEB? They don't do that when they're making a department or new division in the Bureau, do they?
They don't.
Don't they just?
Historically have not done that.
Pardon?
They historically have not used that particular language.
Should we attach any significance to that?
Pardon, Your Honor?
Should we attach any significance to their sort of unique language here?
The only significance I would attach to it is exactly the opposite significance that the Court of Appeals arrived at by stating that the SEIB would be, for administrative purposes, a part of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. The legislature expressed its intent that the SEIB would not be an independent agency, but would be a part of the Bureau.
But if it's part of the Bureau, why does it have to say that the Bureau would administer its affairs? I mean, that would come with being a part of the Bureau, wouldn't it?
And perhaps that would be redundant. Although, when you look at the composition of the SEIB, with one member being a member of the Industrial Commission ex officio, one might otherwise conclude that the SEIB would be a part of the Industrial Commission. And in fact, the mission of the SEIB, what the SEIB does, the kinds of decisions that the SEIB issues are akin to the kinds of decisions that the Industrial Commission makes. Once the Bureau makes a decision that is contested by the parties, that usually goes to the Industrial Commission via decisions by the district hearing officers, then staff hearing officers, and then the commission. The decision that SEIB makes is very similar to the kinds of decisions that the Industrial Commission makes, and its decisions should be subject, as pointed out in the dissent by the Court of Appeals, to actions in mandamus rather than this appeal through 119.12.
Excuse me, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Your Honor, that is exactly the mistake that was made by the Court of Appeals in focusing on this language for administrative purposes and determining that this was then the only purpose for which the Board was a part of the Bureau. When you look at the statutory scheme here, it's clear that SEIB gets its orders or gets its work from the Bureau. The SEIB doesn't have its own agenda. The SEIB's recommendations are then turned back over to the Bureau, and without the Bureau, the SEIB could not function. There is nothing that the SEIB can do on its own. And so it is not in any way independent. It is part of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, and since the Bureau's orders are exempt from Chapter 119, the SEIB's orders should also be exempt from review under 119.12.
Did you represent SEIB at the earlier proceedings?
Did I represent SEIB? I represented SEIB in Common Pleas Court, Your Honor, and in the Court of Appeals.
I want to know why the transcript of proceedings was not filed timely.
There was no transcript. That's a very good question, Your Honor. The SEIB did not provide a stenographer during that first hearing, and that gets into why the Board vacated its hearing. Once the Ravens appealed and attempted to say that it was a 119.12 appeal, the Board looked at its proceedings and that specific language stating that it should provide a hearing in accordance with Chapter 119. Revised Code Section 119.07, which specifically deals with hearings, states that the agency shall provide a stenographic hearing and pay for the transcript if that is ordered, if it's appealed to court.
I understand. Yet, why wasn't there one filed? Because you went back for a second hearing, didn't you?
That's when, well, they vacated the first order in order to give the Ravens a second hearing at which they would have a stenographer, and they did have a stenographer, and they did have, there was a transcript from the second hearing.
Well, wasn't there an appeal pending at that time?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
Did the board have any authority then to conduct this second hearing?
Yes. If the Common Pleas Court did not have jurisdiction to consider it as a 119.12 hearing.
There was an appeal pending.
That's true.
Doesn't that divest the board of jurisdiction to have another hearing?
That's a good question, Your Honor, and I would answer that by saying no, it did not divest them of jurisdiction because, in fact, the Common Pleas Court had no jurisdiction to consider it. Therefore, the board retained jurisdiction.
Common Pleas Court vacated Seeb's order.
That's correct.
The Court of Appeals affirmed that.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You've appealed here.
That's also correct.
Okay. Now let's assume for a moment we affirm. Should it go back for a regular hearing then?
We believe that that is not necessary, that the proper jurisdiction here is in mandamus, and there is no statute of limitations for mandamus actions. So that if this court were simply to reverse all
I said if
aspects.
We affirm, Counselor, if we affirm, it goes back for a hearing, then does it not, or do they win?
If it is affirmed, then it goes back to the to Seeb for a hearing, and then another appeal, I would suppose, under 119.12.
Well, another appeal by somebody, you mean. You might
that,
win.
Okay. That's
and if
correct.
We reverse, then they can still file mandamus.
That's correct. So another mistake that the Court of Appeals made was to determine that that Seeb's order was an adjudication as defined by 119.01, and as pointed out by the dissenting opinion in the court below, the actions, as well as adjudications, of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation are exempt from 119. So, since both the Bureau's actions and adjudications are exempt, and since an adjudication by the Seeb leads to action by the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, then Seeb's adjudication is therefore exempt, because the Bureau's action is exempt. Since the Seeb is this agency within the Bureau and dependent upon the Bureau, its adjudication must receive the same exemption as is afforded the action by the Bureau and the administrator. There was no reason to think that the legislature wanted to create another special statutory proceeding for the Seeb, for self-insured employers to take advantage of. As pointed out by the dissenting opinion in the court below, self-insured employers already have extensive rights and responsibilities. They have administrative proceedings on allowance of the claim, which is followed by an appeal to the Common Pleas Court and a jury trial if necessary. And even after allowance of the claim, they also have administrative proceedings for extensive disability issues, and then they can appeal that or take that into the Court of Appeals by a mandamus action. And I'd like to point out that in two of these cases, the Browns did that with regard to Mr. Harper and Mr. Bolden, and the Court of Appeals told them to pay. And that was in 97 in the case of Mr. Harper or Bolden, and in 98 in the case of the other one. And still they did not pay, which was why the complaints were filed. And this is not the type of decision that is generally taken into 119.12. This is exactly the kind of decision that should be decided by actions in mandamus. Did they pay? Very simple. What was the reason that they did not pay? That should be very simple. And in this case, they had no reason. And thirdly, what is the proper disciplinary action to take? And I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Let me ask you before you sit down, are there some actions that CEEP can take without requiring the administrator of the Bureau to take the action? I thought that as a result of some informal hearings, CEEP was able to cause something to happen. Is that correct or not?
There are certain kinds of recommendations that the board can make, and that is really telling the as happened in the Hillside Dairy case, which was decided by the court below and mentioned in their opinion, really telling the employer to pay by a certain date or else. Within Hillside Dairy, they were told to pay the claims to the injured workers within 30 days, I believe it was, or further action would be taken. And when Hillside Dairy attempted to appeal that, the Court of Appeals stated that that was not the type of case that was ripe for that was an adjudication under 119. But even in that case, the board, the CEEP, gets its complaints from the Bureau's self-insured division and makes its recommendation again back to the administrator. Even in that case, CEEP cannot enforce its own order. It has to send its recommendation to the administrator for implementation.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Thank you.
Mr. Dinn.
Good morning, and thank you, distinguished jurists. My name is Irwin Dinn from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm here today on behalf of the Baltimore Ravens, formerly the Cleveland Browns. I'm also here on behalf of a layperson who couldn't sit next to me today, my wife, Susan Dinn, who provided me with the inspiration for my presentation today. By way of background, Susan Dinn is an educator. She teaches English, 7th and 8th grade English, at the Whitney Young Middle School in Cleveland, Ohio, has done so for many years. Whitney Young is a major work school. As such, she has some of the brightest students in Cleveland. As part of the curriculum in the 7th and 8th grade, she teaches students about the writing and defending of a 3-paragraph and then a 5-paragraph paper. When I spoke to her about coming here today and told her that I thought that we had fairly presented our case in our brief and would probably only be waiting for questions from the court, and then explained to her the workings of the Bureau, a little bit about the Industrial Commission, what the appeal was about, a statute that had to be interpreted, she had two questions about the appellant's position, both of which she said would fail the Whitney Young 8th grade English composition test. The first question was the same as Justice Moyer raised. Why would the Ohio legislature use the words for administrative purposes? All they had to say was that the Self-Insuring Employers Evaluation Board is part of the Bureau. But they didn't say that. They said for administrative purposes. The appellant could not, cannot really defend that. More importantly, however, when I told her that the Bureau has a self-insured department, and the appellant takes the position that the SIEEB is also a part of the Bureau, she asks, isn't that the left hand appealing to the right hand to see if they've made the right decision? It's not as if a party is questioning whether the self-insured department of the Bureau is questioning a decision. It's the self-insured, it's the Bureau asking whether it has made the correct decision. Well, by asking that question, she led me to what I thought was a more pertinent analogy. And that would be, in the workers' compensation context, if a district hearing officer issued an order, and instead of waiting for a claimant or an employer to object, the district hearing officer sends it over to the staff hearing officer and asks, did I get this right? And even more significantly, perhaps, in a better example, if instead of the appellant filing the appeal in this case, if the Court of Appeals had asked the Supreme Court, did we get it right? The position taken by the appellant in this case just doesn't make sense. It wouldn't pass the Whitney Young 8th grade English composition test.
Normally, if it doesn't involve the right to participate, mandamus is required in workers' comp matters.
Without any question, Your Honor.
That being the case, why would you not have moved in mandamus here as opposed?
We don't have any choice in this matter. If we don't file an appeal under Chapter 119, then we lose out because in a mandamus action, the court could rule you had a legal right that you didn't take advantage of, and therefore you're out on your mandamus.
So rather than us making a hybrid, not that you would think it would be a hybrid, but I wrote a phrase a long time ago, and we finally said, if it doesn't involve the right to participate, you have to use mandamus. And if we found this to be part of the Bureau, then mandamus maybe would be appropriate. If we said that, then you'd have a right to bring your mandamus claim.
That's correct, but I'd like to point out what the Court of Appeals has, in effect, said about this issue in the Borsuk case. And there they were referring to a little bit different statute. It's referred to by the appellant. It's 41-23-291. And it talks about the difference of the before and after. As 41-23-291 was originally proposed by the legislature, it contained the words, pursuant to Chapter 119, just as we have in 352, the statute before us. The Court of Appeals in that case said, if the General Assembly had intended that the subcommittee's hearings be held pursuant to RC 119 and that subsequent appeals be taken pursuant to that chapter, it could have incorporated the language of the proposed version into the version finally enacted. Inasmuch as the legislature chose not to include such language in the version as enacted, it must be presumed that it did not intend that orders of the subcommittee be appealed pursuant to revised code 119.12. Now that's what the Court of Appeals, of course, you're not bound by what they say, but that's what the Court of Appeals has said on this issue. 352 does, in fact, say a hearing pursuant to Chapter 119. And that's what we asked for. Not an informal conference where no record was taken, but a hearing. And just to...
Doesn't it speak to conducting the hearings rather than...
It's the whole chapter. What the Court of Appeals has said...
The language is conduct hearings pursuant to...
That was...
Which 119 sets forth a procedure for the conducting of hearings.
That was the proposed language in the other statute that was not enacted, and that was the distinction that the Court of Appeals made. If, in fact, they used the words pursuant to Chapter 119, it would include the right of appeal. If you look at the definition of hearing in Chapter 119, it speaks to the whole chapter. I feel obligated to speak to the distortions, inaccuracies presented by my distinguished colleague.
How about also the comparison between the Scotty Graham's case with the Cincinnati Bengals?
I have to speak to this because of what he has said today.
Good.
In the Bolden case, Mr. Bolden was paid long before the Court of Appeals issued its decision. Clement's counsel didn't present the check to him. It wasn't cashed. In the Harper case, once the Court of Appeals made its ruling, we did pay. And what he doesn't know was that on Friday, three of these complainants had filed a case in the Common Pleas Court in Cuyahoga County for the same purpose that was presented to the SIEEB. And on Friday, a directed verdict was issued in favor of the Baltimore Ravens, formerly Cleveland Browns. In fact, before they could even finish presenting their case. And that was the consensus opinion of the eight jurors and the two alternates.
That's all they won last week, wasn't it?
That's all either team won last week. And unfortunately for me, since I do work for both, I had two losers. I believe we stated our position pretty clearly in our brief, and unless there are further questions, we hope that the court will consider this and affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. McDonald, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to respond to counsel's answer to you, Justice Douglas, on the mandamus action and the fact that he had no choice. As a matter of fact, the Ravens amicus in this case, General Motors, did what the Ravens should have done. In addition to their 119 case, they filed a mandamus action in the Common Police Court of Franklin County, and that case is proceeding as a mandamus action. We have not raised the defense that they have an adequate remedy at law, and that is proceeding on briefs and stipulations of fact as in any other mandamus action.
Yet they filed a brief here in support of them.
Yes, they did, and they are proceeding with their mandamus action.
Maybe they don't want to get burned twice.
And the administrative purposes language in the statute is there as a carryover from when the Industrial Commission made the same decision that the Bureau makes now. And it was made clear at that time that in spite of the fact that the Bureau or the CEB was reporting to the Commission, that the Bureau was for administrative purposes the CEB was for administrative purposes a part of the Bureau. So there's no special significance to limit this administrative purposes language to exclude adjudication.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald.
You're welcome, Your Honor. Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.